even though we read various things, it was a complete surprise, and the Blitzkrieg, and so on, and the dive bombing, and so on, and so on. I think we're all shaken. But I'll illustrate maybe this, our feeling about it. We had a lieutenant with us named Knox, and Ticker Knox he liked the flesh pots. And we were at Otter Point Camp, which is about 30 miles, we'll say, out from Victoria, 25 miles out from Victoria. And in this particular May, whatever it was, in 1940, we were gathered around listening to the news. And the announcer said, the Germans are now within 40 miles of Paris. And Ticker said, hell, that's nothing. We're 25 miles from Victoria. You see, there was this, I suppose, this facetiousness was maybe a catharsis, a relief. Mm-hmm. But there again, we all laughed, mm-hmm. I remember. But it was that sort of, well, can't help it. France is about to fall, and that was it.
What type of training did you get now, down work points and then down later out to Otter?
Well, it wasn't a great deal because we were broken up and filled these guard duties, you see. And when they decided to send one battalion to join the 3rd Division, it became a matter of who is to go. And we were given the choice of going active or overseas service or not. And a fair number of officers begged off and said, no, we're not going. Some same with the NCOs, a number of the men.
What of your militiamen that did not wish to go overseas?
They didn't wish to go overseas, yes.
How did that one go over?
Well, it didn't go over very well with some of us. Those that went active, we felt these other fellows were begging off, and it was the socialites, of course, who...
The socialites from the 1st Battalion of Victoria.
Yeah, and a few from the 2nd Battalion. But it was just about an even split at first. Most of the men were from 2nd Battalion, but an even split on officers. And one of the reasons, of course, for them begging off some of them is that they had to take a reduction in rank or in seniority, because there were the two lieutenant colonels, the two second in commands, and so on. There was only one overseas battalion. So our colonel, Dick Parker, reverted to major to go under Colonel Kingham as his second in command. I didn't drop down in rank, I was a captain then, but I dropped down in seniority, and so on. And some wouldn't do that. And they now designated those who stayed behind, whether they were 1st or 2nd Battalion originally, as the 2nd Battalion. And they went off to do guard duty and on the West Coast and so on.
I can see this causing a lot of strife within the regimental headquarters itself. It was a personal decision.
It was a personal decision, and I had less regard, actually, for my brother officers in the 1st Battalion, or in the 2nd Battalion, for that matter, who didn't sign on, because I always felt, well, they knew from the beginning this is
inevitable. They're going to have to pay the piper.
Sure. Yes.
So you went active.
Mm-hmm.
You lost some seniority, but you kept your rank as captain.
Yes.
Now you become the 1st Battalion.
And we became the so-called 1st Battalion.
You became the so-called 1st Battalion. We're talking May 1940.
About May 1940, yes.
And you're going to go overseas then. Were they going to ship you straight overseas? Were they going to send you back east and train you? What were the circumstances?
We went under canvas. The overseas battalion went under canvas at Macaulay Point. And we did active training there in weapons and whipping the troops into shape and recruiting. And it was that time we recruited a lot of junior officers. But most of those junior officers were senior in age. They were all lot of them men who served in the First World War, very young. They received decorations. Some of them were two bank managers. Two of the men had served in the Canadian-Scottish in the First World War. And these were all men in their, well, almost overage, or some were overage. And they became our second lieutenants and lieutenants, and they were invaluable in steadying the new young troops and in training.
Because of their vast experience?
Because of their experience, yes. And then September of 40, we went east by troop train to Debert Camp in Nova Scotia, near Truro, where we trained during that winter and into the spring, and then eventually overseas.
During the First War, there was a lot of feeling that people were signing up for the flag and or for empire loyalties, crown loyalties. In the Second War, I think a theme historians like to push is that they were signing up for Canada this time. Did you feel this, or is it just something historians are trying to interpret?
I think, and depending on background, I had mixed feelings like that. I naturally had, because of my parents' nationality, and because in that First World War it was king and country sort of business, my brothers went, I suppose I had a slight feeling, but I think my chief feeling was Canadian. And I think in most cases it was a Canadian feeling.
How was the trip across Canada now? I would imagine most people haven't been across.
It was conducted very well. There were two sections of the troop train. And at various points we'd stop and exercise the troops from march. In the mess in Victoria, down in the armories, there's a little framed card with a big Y on it. This was one of the marker cards on the troop train, you know, with car Y, etc. And on it are the autographs of all the officers who were in that. And this was saved by one of the trainmen, one of the conductors, who wrote and gave it to the mess, said he'd kept it over the years, and it was the best behaved troop train that he conducted during the whole period of the war.
Is that right, then?
Which made us very proud.
How were you taken? I don't know how much traveling you'd done previous to this. Were you taken with the vastness of Canada?
Yes, I hadn't crossed Canada before, and I suppose 90% of the troops had. Because other than if they traveled in boxcars or on top of boxcars during the Depression,
yes,
they didn't get anywhere, didn't have any money to get anywhere.
Certainly.
And I think I was impressed with the immensity of the prairie, for instance.
Yeah.
And then the coloring of Canadian Shield area from, let's say, Kenora through north.
Of course.
Yes, the Canadian Shield. And then down and into Nova Scotia.
When you left the troop train, you were to set up a new camp, or you were at a camp? I'm not sure here.
Debert Camp was under construction. Wooden cantonments, you know. But that was it. It was under construction. The main sewage project was still a huge ditch. They were still working on it. Carpenters were still working on the huts. The first day we got there, we went to wash, and there was no lavatories or washing places. And I have a photograph that's down there in the museum now at the regiment, showing three of us walking over into the swamp to wash with our towels over our shoulder. All the privies were outdoor privies, and were for months.
What type of training did you receive here?
Well, it was mostly hardening, for instance, route marches. And for the first time, we began to get information on tactics, new tactics, coming back from England, you see.
You weren't digging trenches anymore.
I weren't. Up to that time, we've been digging trenches on the old pattern of traverse,
yes,
revetting, dugouts, so on. The slit trench idea was absolutely new. Absolutely. And the change came because of the information coming back. You know, you can't stop a tank with a rifle fire from a traverse on a trench. But you can cower in a hole and the tank can pass over you. That sort of idea, you know.
Route marches, were they strictly to give the men something to do?
Yes, in the wintertime, you see, you got the snow. And it was definitely something to do, just the same way as in January, where am I now, 39, 40? In January of 41, there was some talk about the invasion of Norway, you see. You know,
yes,
like a landing in Norway. And whether that sparked it or not, we were issued skis. And we went into about 6 weeks of ski training. They put the whole battalion on skis.
Scotch ski battalion.
And this is something, because we were from the West Coast. Of course, because we were from BC, I suppose they figured we ski. The other two regiments in the brigade were prairie regiments, Regina's and Winnipeg's. And so I suppose they thought, well, you know, everybody skis. I, of course, never been on skis in my life, 90% haven't. But we did have a few people from Revelstoke, including a Canadian of Norwegian descent, who was a ski champion.
Oh, wow.
And he took charge in the instruction of sergeant. I forget his name. Then that might have been it, but I think it was just lucky coincidence. But that was purely... obviously, to keep the troops amused, because it was right in the depth of winter.
So a lot of these things were done just to give the troops a place to go, something to do, and not give them enough time to lay around and have barrack room lawyers? Is that the...
That's right, yes.
That type of idea.
Yes.
How were the civilian-military relations now? We're in wartime, things are getting, you know, very, very dreary, the news is.
Yeah.
Was there a significant improvement, or...
Well, certainly down in Nova Scotia, we were well treated by the people. I suppose that was in part of the nature of the people, their parentage, their heritage, better say. What should we call these people? There were still speaking of Upper Canada, you know. but they did pride themselves on their heritage, whether it was Scottish or British,
yes,
and so on and so on. So our relations were very good, although we did have some trouble in the spring of, 41, when there was a carnival in Truro, and some of the troops went in and were supposedly cheated on the games of chance, and there was a small fight, and somebody was hurt. And about the next night, the whole gang went in and wrecked the place. And that was trouble. That was trouble. I don't know if Dr. Roy mentions that in the history or not. I can't remember. Or whether it was ever told. But there was trouble over that, and we were all confined to barracks, of course, for about a week to find out what happened, etc. So on. But that was not the townspeople, you see. The townspeople got along very well.
Well, carnivals are always trouble, aren't they?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Expected. I think they go from one into the pan of fire.
Yeah.
You're the first battalion, you're selected to go overseas. How long did you remain in the Maritimes?
We remained in the Maritimes. Battalion stayed there for just about a year. I actually went to Britain a month before, because I took over the advance party.
I see.
To take over a barracks and...
So we're talking 1942, before the battalion gets overseas, is that correct?
No, we're talking of 41. Oh, wait. No. Blitz was in 40.
Yeah.
Yes. And It was just in 40 that we moved down from Victoria to the Burt.
40,
41,
yes.
And we were in the Burt camp from September of 40 to September of 41.
September 40, so it was late 41 before the
battalion
decided to go overseas.
Yes, before they were sent overseas.
Was there any feeling of what's taking so long? Why are these people dragging their feet?
No, I think as the spring came on, there was a feeling of elation that we were going to go somewhere. We were now in 3rd Division, and we were trained as a brigade with the other two regiments in the brigade. We could see the other encampments where the whole division was assembled. We were a divisional camp. We knew our brigadier, we knew our major general, we knew the staff, and there was a better feeling. As spring came on, about May, we had sports meet and so on, divisional sports meet, you see. So we felt we were part of a big group, and
big
we were going. Yes, and we were going somewhere.
Now you had your new uniforms by this time. Your Second War battle dress coming in, as opposed to the first. How did that affect? Do you feel like you're really getting into it now? Were you starting to, be a real soldier,
But we were getting our transport too. For the first time, we're getting our trucks and cars and jeeps, not jeeps because they came later. And this was a big deal, you see. Because up to that time, the only way we could illustrate anything was by toy cars and stand tape. Now we loaded our men into troop carriers and away we'd go, and so on. So we were getting more equipment and certainly more dress, so on. The messes were functioning very well, sergeant's mess, men's mess. Set up a dry canteen for the men.
The dry canteen?
I think it was a wet canteen too.
Officially it was a dry canteen.
Yes.
Okay. How was transport overseas? We're having U-boats, the wolf packs are running loose.
Mm-hmm.
There's convoys being made up in Halifax and things. Did you leave out of Halifax?
Yes. I went over, as I say, to the advance party of about 30, one other officer, a lieutenant and a sergeant major, and about...
He's still a captain at this time, sir?
Still a captain, yes. And we embarked on a P&O, Peninsula and Orient Line boat, the Strath-Eden or the Strathmore, one of the two. And the...
So this is August or September?
This was August, early August. I was over there about a month before the battalion arrived.
It was August 41.
August 41, that's right. And we were put, say, on the Strathmore, I think it was. And contained two regiments that were going over. The Canadian Scottish were held back, just the advance party going over, and I was on this vessel with the Queen's Own Rifles of Canada as part of our 8th Brigade, and the Chaudière Regiment, the French Canadian Regiment, Chaudière. I shared a cabin with the late Lieutenant Governor of Quebec, Hugh Lapointe.
Really?
He was a captain, and there was a Taschereau, Captain Taschereau, too, all the French Canadian names.
How were the accommodations?
Were good for officers and not bad for the troops. Troops had hammocks and things like that. And they were well fed.
Not bad consist of them.
Well, it was a bit crowded. It was a bit crowded, as far as I could see. But the food was good. The food was good. The P&O still had all their Lascar crews, and their cooks were the cooks that had been used to the civilian traffic, and the food was good. That convoy consisted of the Strath Eden, the Strath Moor, the Duchess of Argyll, and a Canadian Pacific steamship. There are four troop ships, because the whole division was going practically except the Scottish. And in the middle of that convoy was the battleship Malaya, and a destroyer screen out here. About, as far as I remember, I'm seeing about 10 destroyers out front, and goodness only knows how many were out beyond the horizon, etc. And we went up quite near Iceland and then down into Scotland and landed at Gerwick.
Were you zigzagging your way?
Yeah, yes.
Any submarine activity at all?
No, I think there was one slight scare. The sirens went, we took up stations at lifeboats and put
on. You didn't become part of the ship's company in the sense that you didn't look after guns, or did you?
No. As far as I know, those troop ships weren't armed at that time.
So you were just strictly freight?
We were strictly passengers of freight, yes. Yes.
You get into Gerwick, Scotland. Did you immediately have to come down by train into London, or what was
that's that? Right, right down through and to, I can't remember, London, then through to Aldershot,
where we
took over the very old Salamanca barracks.
What were your impressions now? You're coming into the Battle of Britain has been going on. They've been fighting the war since 39. This is your first trip to Britain. What were your impressions?
Well, I think, looking back on it now, and even at the time, it was the fortitude of these people. The Blitz had been in 40, and they could see damage, bomb damage all over the place. And these people were really shrugging and saying, sort of carry on. I think this is my chief impression of these people, their fortitude, and their... Although they grumbled, that was a British tradition anyways, a bit. But they would line up for hours to get maybe a half a pound of beef, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah, it was rationing in lineups now. Did you have much experience?
Well, no, I didn't. I know that I've been in homes where they treated me to a bit of beef or something of the sort, and they didn't have very much left for themselves. Later, when we began to get parcels, they very often we'd take up can of bully beef or something to biscuits and things they couldn't get and hand over to them.
But the queuing, did that strike you as odd?
Oh yes, it struck me as very odd because in Canada you didn't queue. And you only started to queue in Canada in, what, the last 20 years or so. Yeah. I still hate queuing.
Oh,
but I think I was struck by the fortitude of these people and the fact that they were still sleeping in the underground station, you know, when I was there. And some never really gave that up, you know. Because by the time the other bombing stopped, then the V-1s and V-2s started to come over.
Certainly. You went to Aldershot, and you had to prepare your barracks. What all entailed did you have to do?
Well, these are very old wood brick buildings. And they were... had been used by British troops, and a great many British troops are now dispersed, you know, Africa and all over the place. And so some of these were empty, they'd be made available to the Canadians. And from their names, they were pretty old, Salamanca versus. And they were in charge of a little corps of men, much like our commissionaires now, called the Barrack Wardens. They wore little blue uniforms and they were old soldiers and they knew all the tricks. And so you went in and they would say, there are 40 palliasses here and there are 40 cots. And then you immediately say to your sergeant or something, count them. And there'd be 38. And you know, they would show you stacks of plates to go into the messes. And they'd say, well, there's 50 plates there, you know, whatever it was. And so you'd say, all right, run around. Then you go around and walk around it, and here were little cracks. And if you lifted them off, here was a plate maybe broken in three pieces. Put together in a...
right.
And then eventually you sign for these things, you see.
What was it? Why? Just because they didn't have enough? Or... flogging it on the side?
No, I don't think so. I think it was just this matter of pride. One thing I thought, well, these ready Canadians, they don't know anything about this takeover business. You know, when you got stung, if you didn't watch out. Right? And of course, when you... I'd love to get in there and dig some of that stuff out now if it's still there, although I understand those barracks have been raised and new barracks built. But they had all sorts of ancient stuff, you know. Officers' coffee mills and things that hadn't been in use maybe for 30 years. Not since Crimean War, I think.
Christ was a child. Of course.
All sorts of stuff. And
well, how did that strike? Now you're really coming, now the Canadian Scottish have a tremendous historical background. Now you're coming into an area where these regiments go back for eons, and the barracks are named after battles been in. That did you feel like a Johnny Come Lately type thing, or that?
Yes, a little overawed, I think, by the fact that we're now occupying barracks and maybe an illustrious British regiment. But we also had our connections, you see, because the Colonel in chief of the regiment was Princess Mary, Princess Royal, and she came down within a month to inspect the battalion after it arrived. It arrived, you see, as I say, in about September of 41, and that was part of our job as advance party. We put guides down because of the blackout, which of course was another thing that impressed us, to lead them up and get them, guide them to the barracks and so on and so on.
What was your impression? Did you have planes coming over when you were there?
Just a few, and it became less and less. It was always impressive at night because of the searchlights, always circling, always watching, and the blackout down below. And then if anything did come over, you'd hear the anti-aircraft guns go up, 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 and then you see maybe the flashes all around. And then, if you were in a Nissen hut with a tin roof, you'd hear the bits of shrapnel coming down on the roof, you know. The near misses and so on and so on.
Lots of garbage falling from
lots
the sky.
Lots of garbage, yes. Lots of fallout.
All good for today. Thank you very much.
Right.